idam this Bhagavatam book containing the narration of the personality of Godhead and his pure devotees. Dharma of the name Puranam, supplementary to the Vedas. Brahma Samhitam, incarnation of Lord Sri Krishna. Uttama Shloka, of the personality of Godhead. Charitam, activities. Chapkara, compiled. Bhagavan, incarnation of the personality of Godhead. Rishi, Sri Vyasadeva. Nishayasaya, for the ultimate good. Lokasya, of all people. Danyam, fully successful. Sastyayanam, all blissful. Mahat, all perfect. Translation. So this is Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text Number 40, translation. This Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of God, and it is compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of God. It is meant for the ultimate good of all people, and it is all successful, all blissful, and all perfect. Report by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declared that Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless, sound representation of all Vedic knowledge and history. So there's actually a Sanskrit verse composed by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which Srila Prabhupada's first statement there is a summary of that. Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam Prima Pumata Maham Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Matam Idam Tatadara Napraha. That's Srila Prabhupada's first statement there is really a summary of that verse by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declared that the Srimad Bhagavatam is a spotless, sound representation of all Vedic knowledge and history. In essence, it also describes the fifth goal of life Prempumato Maham, which is above Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. Then there is the fifth goal, which is Prima, or pure love of God. Srila Prabhupada's purport continues. There are selected histories of great devotees who are in direct contact with the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam is a literary incarnation of Lord Krishna and therefore and is therefore non-different from him. Srimad Bhagavatam should be worshipped as respectfully as we worship the Lord. Thereby, we can derive the ultimate blessings of the Lord through its careful and patient study. As God is all light, all bliss, and all perfection, so also is Srimad Bhagavatam. We can have all the transcendental life of the Supreme Brahman Sri Krishna from the recitation of the Srimad Bhagavatam, provided it is received through the medium of the transparent spiritual master. So this is one of the main points here, this statement, that we can have all the transcendental light of the Supreme Brahman Sri Krishna from the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam, provided it is received through the medium of the transparent spiritual master. That's the essence of this purport and verse, because it is describing Srimad Bhagavatam is the incarnation of God, so we can have the same benefits as God, but it is compiled by the incarnation of God, or Srila Vyasadeva. So it comes down in disciplic succession from Srila Vyasadeva. Then the benefit is there. To give an example of this, Srila Prabhupada says, Lord Chaitanya's private secretary, Srila Swarup Damodar Goswami, advised all intending visitors who came to see the Lord of Puri to make a study of the Bhagavatam from the person Bhagavatam. person, Bhagavatam, is the self-realized bona fide spiritual master, and through him only one can understand the lessons of Bhagavatam in order to receive the desired result. One can derive from the study of the Bhagavatam all benefits that are possible to be derived from the personal presence of the Lord. It carries with it all the transcendental blessings of Lord Sri Krishna that we can expect from his personal contact. This verses 40 to 43, which describe the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, answer the sixth of the questions asked by the sages of Naimisharanya to Sudhir Goswami in chapter 1. Remember all those questions? Okay, right. Have we done this? Did someone do this the other day? No? Okay. Yeah. No, okay, I'm not sure. In chapter 1, now in verse 9, first question, what is the absolute and ultimate good for people in general? Which was answered in the second chapter, verses 6 and 7, that developing love of God through devotional service gives the ultimate benefit. And of course here, you know, that science of developing devotional service is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, and therefore it describes that this Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for the ultimate good of all people. The second question, what is the essence of all scriptures? Again, in the second chapter, verses 6 and 7, and continuing to verse 28, that Krishna is the only object of all worship. Establishing one's relationship with him, this is proclaimed to be the essence of all Vedic literatures. So the Srimad Bhagavatam deals with that science of worshipping Krishna and establishing her eternal relationship with him. Question 3 was mentioned in verse 12, that why did Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, appear? And that was mentioned in the answer in the second chapter. There's a couple of places in verse 34, to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness. And of course, this Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to bring us to that mode of pure goodness. Also in verse 28, it's mentioned in other places in the Srimad Bhagavatam as well, in a similar way. Verse 4, which is in the first chapter, text 17, tell us the acts the Lord performs in relationship to creating the material world. So this is described again towards the end of the second chapter of the first canto, verses 30 to 33. And of course verses, chapters, cantos 2 and 3 continue that explanation of creation. The fifth question, of course, describes the activities of the incarnations of the Lord. So we've just finished that in this chapter, and in Canto 2 there's more descriptions, and of course these descriptions of the incarnations go throughout the Bhagavatam. And this sixth question, that where have religious principles gone after Lord Krishna's disappearance from this planet? And this verses 40 to 43 in effect answer that question in summary, that where have religious principles gone? They take shelter in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is non different from Krishna, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to deliver the fallen people in the age of Kali, and to, you know, help them to come to the mode of pure goodness and understand the eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, and to perform devotional service to become perfect in love of God. So now, and as Srila Prabhupada mentions, you know, the main point is that, so therefore, we can derive all the benefit required to go back to the spiritual world from Srimad Bhagavatam in the same way as if we were personally associating with Krishna. And therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam should be worshipped in that way. In order to describe a little bit about the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, its importance, how it should be worshipped and how it should be understood, we can describe a little summary of the life of Srinivas Acharya, because it's his disappearance day today. Yeah, always got to check his Vaishnava calendar. People have different days, different tasks. But yeah, Srinivas Acharya is also the disappearance day of Gadadhar Das Goswami, and it's also the disappearance day of Dhananjaya Pandit. So in discussing the life of Srinivas Acharya, a lot of the points in this purport we can emphasize in that way. So initially, Srinivas Acharya in disciplic succession. Srinivas, the word Srinivas actually means the abode of the goddess of fortune, particularly in this case, the abode of Srimati Radharani, considering that he is a very intimate associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there. Followers of Srimati Radharani more so than Lakshmi. So the abode of the resting place of Srimati Radharani. Just in summary, his achievements is that he led the first book distribution party in the history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. He co-organized the first Gaupaneen festival. He developed elaborate techniques of Manjari Savana, how to perform one's devotional service in this world, one's external devotional service of preaching Krishna consciousness, and at the same time meditating in a very scientific way on one's eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord and his associates in the spiritual world. So acting in that role as well, Manjari Sadhana. He originated the Manohar Soi style of Kirtan. So he has his own particular style of Kirtan, which is very, very nice. And one of the main features of his preaching was converting to Vaishnavism King Bihambir, which we'll discuss in this history. In disciplic succession, Srila Prabhupada mentions that he was just after the six Goswamis. In essence, he was a contemporary with Narottam Das Thakur. Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, Shamananda, they studied under Jiva Goswamis, and they're all about the same age, so they were contemporaries. But at the same time, Srinivas Acharya is considered to be just prior to, technically, to Narottam Das Thakur, because Srinivas Acharya's spiritual master was Gopalabhata Goswami, one of the six Goswamis, whereas Narottam Das Thakur, he took initiation from Lokanath Das Goswami, who was an associate of the six Goswamis. But he served his guru, in essence, by serving his guru's dearest associate, Krishnadas Kaviraj. And so he's considered, in one sense, in our disciplic succession, we quite often consider him to be coming as a disciple of Krishnadas Kaviraj. So, they're basically they're contemporaries, but generally offer respect to Srinivas Acharya as being just prior, in one sense, in our disciplic succession. So, Srinivasa Charya, spiritual master, Gaudapada Goswami, he is said to be, some say he was an Angamanjari, although some say that actually Janada Mata was an Angamanjari. Sometimes these personalities from the spiritual world do appear in different personalities at the same time. That's not out of the question. Just like today is actually the disappearance day of Gadadhar Das Goswami. Not to be confused with Gadadhar Pandit, we mentioned in the Panchatattva. Gadadhar Pandit was an incarnation of Srimati Radharani, the mood of Srimati Radharani, whereas Gadadhar Das is considered to be the incarnation of the luster of Srimati Radharani. So you see that the one personality, Srimati Radharani, and of course Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is considered to be Radhakrishna combined. So the one personality of Srimati Radharani, appears in three different personalities. So it's not incorrect that sometimes these Ananga Manjari is she's the younger sister of Srimati Radharani, and Gokula Bhatta Goswami was considered partial expansion of Ananga Manjari, and he is also known as Guna Manjari in the spiritual world. So either way, he is one of the associates of the. He's one of the Manjari Gopi servants, assistants to the Srimati Radharani's Gopi friends. And Srinivasacharya is his disciple. He is also a Manjari. So let's hear a little bit about the life of Srinivasacharya. So I've sort of just written this summary of which is compiled from the various biographies about Srinivasacharya, so I've just tried to condense it into a something we can get hopefully into one class. Srinivasacharya's parents, Gangadhar Bhattacharya and Lakshmi Priya, lived in the village of Chikandi on the banks of the Ganges in the Burdwan district of Bengal. Gangadhar spent much time discussing the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya, but due to social and familial pressures, he inwardly resolved himself to passive service by meditation and separation. However, by 1510, he decided to travel to Navadvipa to see the Lord of his life. Upon arriving in Katwa, he heard that Sri Chaitanya was preparing to take sannyas. This was not very appealing to him, seeing it as an unnecessary austerity for the Lord. As he approached, he saw Nityananda Prabhu, Chandrasekhara, and Sri Mukunda Das, and many others. He saw Madhushil, the barber, preparing to cut Nimai's raven black locks of hair. All present were reluctant to see the Lord to take sannyas, but Keshava Bharati finally gave Nimai his sannyas name, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. All Gangadhara could do was repeatedly chant Chaitanya, Chaitanya with mixed emotions. When he arrived back in the village of Chikandi, still repeatedly chanting in ecstasy, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, his wife also began to chant in ecstasy. Soon the whole village marveled at the vital transformation of the couple. They decided to give Gangadhara the new nickname Chaitanya Das. Soon, the couple travelled to Puri to see Mahaprabhu. Arriving there, they immediately surrendered unto his lotus feet. The Lord then asked them to visit Lord Jagannath. Accompanied by Mahaprabhu's servant Govinda, they offered many prayers to Lord Jagannath and were then given very nice accommodations. One day, Mahaprabhu told his servant Govinda, "Although Chaitanya Das and his wife have not mentioned it to me, they would like to have a child. They admitted this in front of Lord Jagannath, whom I am not different from. The desired offspring will soon appear and his name will be Srinivas. He will be very beautiful. Through Rupa and Sanatan I will manifest the Bhakti Shastras, and through Srinivas these Shastras will be distributed. Let that Brahmana and his wife quickly return to Chikandi." So the couple returned to their village and conceived a male child. On the full moon day of the month of Vaishakha, in the constellation of Rahini, he was born and named Srinivas. The year was somewhere between 1520 and 1530 AD. Lakshmi Priya's astrologer father informed the couple that their child was a Mahapurush, a divinely empowered soul. His bodily lustre was just like molten gold. He had a long, elegant nose. His eyes were large and beautiful like lotuses. He had a broad chest and his hands extended to his knees. His mother would always sing Gaura Kirtan and the glories of Radha Krishna in his ears. He studied under Dhananjaya Vijayavachaspati, who taught him all branches of knowledge. His teacher, however, admitted, "This boy knows more than I could ever hope to learn." The goddess of learning appeared to Srinivas and told him in a dream that she would personally make him proficient in all areas of learning, especially the scriptures. Thus he became the most loved gem of the village. Srinivas met Narahari of nearby Srikand. After this, ecstatic symptoms began to manifest in his body. So Narahari is a very famous associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As Srinivas was thinking of going to Puri, his father passed away. And Srinivas stayed to console his relatives. There's an interesting pastime here, how Srinivas Acharya, many of the different personalities he particularly wanted to see, although he associated many of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu before they disappeared, there were some he particularly wanted to see, and they would they passed away from this world just, you know, literally within days of him getting to see them. I remember in the original Bhagavad Times, I'm still not sure if they corrected it actually, but when it talks about Srivas Pandit, they sometimes say Srinivas. So, and describes how Srinivas met such and such personalities. But so if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you may think that Srinivas Acharya had such and such association with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but it's actually referring to Srivas Pandit. So, but I'm not sure if they corrected that. So, as Srinivas was thinking of going to Puri, his father passed away, and Srinivas stayed to console his relatives. Narahari advised Srinivas to see to his mother's care and maintenance in Jajigram, where her father Balaram Vipra and her brothers resided. Meanwhile, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prepared his associates for the arrival of Srinivas. Mahaprabhu requested Gadadhar Pandit to teach Srinivas the Srimad Bhagavatam upon his arrival. He also sent a letter to Rupa, Sanat and Gopalabhata requesting them to train Srinivas in spiritual life when he arrived. Srinivas asked Narahari for initiation into chanting the holy names, but Narahari told him that Mahaprabhu desired that he eventually take initiation from Gopalabhata Goswami. So still a young boy, he travelled to Puri, but on the way he heard about Mahaprabhu's departure from this world. He at first wanted to commit suicide by setting his body on fire. However, both Sri Chaitanya and Nityananda appeared to him in a dream and consoled him. Grief-stricken, he made his way to the Gopinath temple in Puri to take shelter of Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit was also overcome with intense separation and tears welled from his eyes incessantly. Srinivas introduced himself and Gadadhar Pandit's mood brightened. He told Srinivas that Sri Chaitanya had asked him to teach Srinivas the Bhagavatam and explain Krishna Leela upon his arrival. Gadadhar rejoiced in the prospect of being able to fulfill one of Mahaprabhu's last desires, but suddenly he was again overcome with grief. He said, "I cannot teach you Bhagavatam at this time, for the manuscript in my possession has now become illegible due to the profusion of tears that I had cried on its pages." So as he read the Srimad Bhagavatam, so many tears, you could no longer read any of the writing. And actually that Bhagavatam, even prior to Gadadhar Das Pandit, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to read that exact copy, and his tears had also, you know, made the writing illegible. So Srinivas touched the sacred book to his head reverentially and began to experience ecstatic symptoms. Sri Gadadhar sent a message to Narahari to secure another manuscript of the Bhagavatam so he could teach Srinivas. Narahari replied that another copy was available and that a messenger should be dispatched to receive the book. Gadadhar sent Srinivas to get the manuscript and told him to hurry because due to separation from Mahaprabhu he did not know how long he could remain living. Before leaving, Srinivas fulfilled a long-cherished desire to see many other direct associates of Sri Chaitanya. He visited Ramananda Roy, Sikhi Mahiti, Sarvabhauma, Vakreshvara Pandit, Paramananda Puri, Gopinath Acharya, and many others. By seeing Srinivas, all of these great personalities were reminded of Sri Chaitanya. They considered him to be Gaura Shakti, the embodiment of the energy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Thus they understood that through Srinivas, the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be widely distributed. Therefore, they all gave him important instructions and advice for carrying on the mission. So, very fortunate that he was pretty much blessed by all of the prominent devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And as we saw, even in a dream, he also got the blessings and the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda themselves. When Srinivas arrived in Bengal, so it's interesting, of course, that he has to go all the way to Bengal to get a copy of the, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam. It's, you know, it's these books, you know, how fortunate we are now, you know, if we didn't have a Bhagavatam, so I'll just go to the ashram and see if there's one there, or, you know, there's Bhagavatams everywhere. Like that. What's that?
It's online.
Online as well, that's a good point. Even though it's online, it's still not different from Krishna. And so Krishna is online. Yeah. So, how accessible. So, Srinivas, now some say when he got to Bengal, and some say that when he returned to Puri, but anyway, at that point he heard that Gadadhar Das Pandit had actually passed away. But again, Gadadhar Pandit appeared to him and encouraged him to just go forward. But still, of course, Srinivas was very grief-stricken. So several years passed before he would arrive in Vrindavan. During this time, he continued his studies and pilgrimages to the places associated with Mahaprabhu's pastimes and associates. Now, meanwhile, Sri Janava Mata, upon arriving in Vrindavan, was requested by Rupa Goswami to send Srinivas as soon as possible. So he's saying, when you see this Srinivas, you know, get him to come here. So on her return to Bengal, she asked Narahari to do this because Rupa Goswami was waiting to train him as commanded by Mahaprabhu. So Narahari advised Srinivas, you hasten. So Srinivas was in Navadvip and he was enthralled by meeting so many different personalities, such as Vishnu Priya, so it's Mahaprabhu's consort. Her servants, Vamsi Vedanta Kaur and Ishan Prabhu. So everyone was blessing Srinivas and discussing with him about the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He observed that Vishnu Priya, when she would chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, she would chant the Maha Mantra and then she would place aside one grain of rice. And when she'd finished her daily chanting, that's the amount of rice only that she would eat. Srinivas also met Damodar Pandit, Suklambara Brahmachari, Murari Gupta and others. Then he went to Santipur where he met Sri Advaita's wife Sita Thakurani and her two sons Chuta and Gopal. He then visited Lord Nityananda's wife Janavamata and her son Virabhadra in Kadaha. And that's where Janava told him to start for Vrindavan without delay because Rupa and Sanatana would soon depart this world. On the way to Vrindavan, he stopped to visit Abhiram Thakur. So that Abhiram, of course, is an incarnation of Krishna's friend, Sridhar. He stopped there to give him a letter from Janavamata. And this Abhiram Thakur, he greeted him with, you know, he gave him three lashes of his whip, because he had the famous whip. That, you know, if you got whipped by this whip, you developed love of God immediately. This was, it was like a bamboo rod sort of a whip. It was actually known as Jai Mangal. So, they say that, you know, Srinivas Acharya, he started to manifest, you know, the symptoms of ecstatic love of God after, you know, being hit by that whip. So Abhiram and his wife Malini both gave Srinivas valuable instructions and reiterated the importance of hastening to Vrindavan. On his way, he stopped in Katwa, then Agwadweep, then Ekachakra, the birthplace of Nityananda Prabhu. Then he made a final stop in Judge Graham to say farewell to his mother and to once again visit Nada Hari Sakara, who was very concerned that he should proceed without any further delay. So by this time, Srinivas was actually a full adult. So meanwhile, Sanatan had passed away and Rupa could not bear the separation. Rupa asked Jiva Goswami to instruct Srinivas when he arrived, as he did not think he would survive to see him. Along the way, Srinivas stopped at Benares, where Chandrasekhara showed him the places associated with Chaitanya's pastimes. Then he spent the night at Prayag. 4 nights before arriving in Vrindavan, he heard that Sanatan had already passed away. Moreover, when he reached Mathura, he heard that Rupa Goswami had passed away only 3 days before. Hearing this, he fell to the ground crying like a madman. He felt that he was the most unfortunate person in the universe. He sat beneath a tree and wished for his own death. Just then, Rupa and Sanatan appeared before him, and they told him that he was the embodiment of Mahaprabhu's love. They encouraged him to proceed to Vrindavan and to take shelter of Gopalabhada Goswami and to study under Jiva Goswami with all his life and soul. Finally, feeling the dust of Vrindavan beneath his feet, he felt great joy. He approached the preliminary structure of Govindadeva. He sat before the deity in trance and Jiva Goswami and his followers arrived on the scene. Srinivas immediately recognized the great Acharya Jiva Goswami and was greeted by Jiva Goswami with great warmth and hospitality. Jiva Goswami brought him to his Radha Damodar temple and gave him comfortable lodging. The next day, he visited the tomb of Rupa Goswami, and Jiva Goswami introduced him to Gopalabhada Goswami, who greeted him with kind words but openly expressed his regret that he could not have arrived earlier. Because Rupa and Sanatan were very anxious to meet him. So Gopalabhata then took him to his Radha Ramana temple, where he asked the deities to bless him. At this time, Gopalabhata revealed to him that Srinivasa's eternal spiritual identity was that of Manimanjari, and that he should always meditate upon serving Gunamanjari, or Anangamanjari, who is none other than Gopalabhata Goswami himself. In this way, his spiritual master engaging directly in the service of Srimati Radharani and her Gopi associates. This is from the very first meeting. After this, Gopalabhata introduced Srinivas to all the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Gopalabhata initiated Srinivas and gave him instruction. After some time had passed, he eventually sent Srinivas to Jiva Goswami for further instruction and training, and was as was desired by Rupa and Sanatana. So this is a very common practice in Vaishnava culture, that although we may take initiation from our Diksha Guru, in many cases the Diksha Guru will actually allocate most of the training of the disciple to other Shiksha Gurus. And therefore, one of the things I think it was Sivaram Goswami wrote a book, and the conclusion of the book about Shiksha Gurus is that in ISKCON we have a tendency to neglect the Shiksha Guru principle. But we should understand from these pastimes that Shiksha Guru is as prominent, if sometimes not more prominent, in the role of training and giving shelter to disciples. So in ISKCON it's recognized that we actually have to do a lot of work on this particular aspect of Krishna consciousness, and that is to give due credence to the Shiksha Gurus in ISKCON who are assisting the Diksha Guru to train up the disciples. So Narottam had been studying Gopalabhata Goswami. Narottam had been studying under Jiva Goswami for a year at this time. Duki Krishna Das also arrived to take instruction from Jiva Goswami. These three became inseparable friends and the best students of Jiva Goswami. So that's Narottam, Srinivas, and Duki Krishna, who later became Shamananda. Jiva Goswami asked them to study also the 12 forests of Vrindavan with Raghava Pandit, who is an incarnation of Dhanishtra. to comply with the wishes of Janava Mata, Jiva Goswami gave his three best students the mission to distribute the Goswami literature to the rest of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, especially in Bengal and Orissa, where they embraced Vaishnavism but were lacking the philosophical literature. So Janava Mata, she understood that, because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in Bengal and of course spent a lot of time in Jagannath Puri, that there are many, many followers, great followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but the sentiment of love and attachment was there, but the philosophical platform was somewhat lacking, and she wanted to correct that imbalance so that Vaishnavas have both the sentiment of love and attachment to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sri Radha Krishna with a very sound philosophical basis. So, this is very pleasing to Janava Mata that when devotees try to develop these two aspects of Krishna consciousness. In a large assembly of devotees, Jiva Goswami gave Narottam Das Thakur the title Thakur Mahasani. Then he gave Srinivas the title Srinivas Acharya And finally, Dukhi Krishnadas was given the title Shyamananda because he had brought great pleasure to Srimati Radharani. He then told them of their travelling Sankirtan mission throughout the provinces of India. They went to their initiating gurus for the blessings to begin and then returned to Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami employed a rich merchant from Mathura to supply a huge cart, 4 strong bullocks, 2 cartmen and 10 armed guards. The original works of the Goswamis and some other Vaishnavas were carefully placed in a wooden chest which was bolted and covered with a special wax cloth. Jiva Goswami also secured a special passport from the king of Jaipur to help them in the eastern regions of India. And after very thorough preparations, they left. So several devotees, including Jiva, accompanied them to Mathura, being unable to bear their separation. As the caravan reached Agra, the well-wishers fell behind. After many months of travel, they approached Gaudadesh and rested the night in a small village named Gopalpur, within the kingdom of Vanavishnapur. Here the valuable cargo of books was stolen. The king of this area, King Birhambir, was also the chief among the dacoits, and he used many astrologers to foretell what valuable cargo came into his kingdom. The dacoits followed the Sankirtan party until it came within the king's borders. The dacoits were eager for the cargo, which astrologers had said was more valuable than gold. So, when the weary travellers awoke in the morning, they saw that the books had been stolen, and then they wept in disbelief. Srinivas made it his solemn duty to retrieve the stolen cargo. He sent Narottama and Shyamananda to proceed with their mission into Bengal and Orissa. Srinivas wrote to Jiva Goswami explaining the unfortunate turn of events. Meanwhile, King Birhambir opened the chest to find the books and not his expected jewels. Upon seeing the works of Rupa Goswami, he felt a change within his heart, the stirrings of love of God. He knew that he had committed a great offence. When he retired for the night, he dreamed that a beautiful and effulgent person smilingly said to him, "Do not worry, soon I will come and we shall meet. I will retrieve the books and you will be relieved of all sinful reactions. Know for certain that you are my servant life after life and I am your eternal well-wisher." So, meanwhile, Srinivas met a Brahmana on the outskirts of Vishnupur named Sri Krishna Vallabha. They became friends and Srinivas became a guest at his house. He later became a pupil of Srinivas and surrendered unto him. One day the Brahmana mentioned that the king regularly convened a Bhagavatam study for all who were interested. Srinivas asked Krishna Vallabha to take him the next morning. When they arrived, the court pundit was lecturing on the Bhagavatam. Srinivas was unimpressed but remained silent. Daily this went on for 2 weeks. Finally, Srinivas spoke up and said, "Sir, you do not follow the texts, nor are your commentaries in line with Sridhar Swami or the other standard exponents of the Bhagavad philosophy." Although this advice was ignored by the pundit, the king was intrigued. The next day, this pundit spoke again on the Rasa Leela, and Srinivas respectfully but firmly interrupted with a question, "Sir, how can you comment on such confidential subjects without referring to the authoritative statements of Sridhar Swami? You are obviously unfamiliar with his work." The pundit now became angry. The king intervened, saying, "How is it that this Brahmana scholar finds fault with your explanations? Perhaps your interpretations are questionable." Vachacharya replied, "Who can interpret the text better than I? This is a newcomer. This newcomer is an upstart, and he dares to question me in the presence of your majesty. If you are such an authority on the Bhagavatam, why don't you come and sit and explain the same verses in a more brilliant way?" So Srinivas rose to the challenge. He recited the verses in the most melodious style, and then he spontaneously commentated upon them with great verve and authority. He drew upon all the existing Vaishnava explanations and yet offered his own unique presentation. The king encouraged him to go on, which he did for several hours. Finally, the whole assembly applauded in ecstasy. Vachacharya was defeated but was also in ecstasy. After some introductions, the king arranged for Srinivas to stay as long as he liked. So, you know, that night actually the king listened in the next room. You could hear Srinivas chanting throughout the night. He gave the king a lot of ecstasy. So many people came in order to hope to become the disciple of Srinivas. And the king actually said to him, "You are the real king, for you have love for Krishna. I am not even worthy to be in your presence. Allow me to be your servant, please. How can I serve you? My kingdom is at your disposal." So then Srinivas revealed the nature of his mission and how he desired to get back the stolen books. So the king remorsefully burst into tears and admitted his great offence at stealing the books. But he realised that if he had not taken the books, he would never admit Srinivas Acharya. So Srinivas laughed and said that, you know, such sinful acts were not necessary to get his association. In fact, it was an obstacle. But he forgave him and asked him to not commit sin anymore, which the king was happy to comply. So then, of course, Srinivas was overwhelmed with ecstatic symptoms to get the books and back, and he placed his garland upon the king. On Srinivas's request, the king brought various paraphernalia for the worship of the books and watched Srinivas worship the Shastras. So here we see that you know, Srinivas Acharya also shows us that these books, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam and books describing about Srimad Bhagavatam are non-different from Krishna, and they should be worshipped with all paraphernalia. Yeah, sometimes we see people put the Bhagavatam on, you know, the floor or, you know, what have you, but you should never do that. So he initiated the king and his wife and his son. Krishna Vallabha, the Brahmana, and the Pandit, Vachacharya, they also became disciples. Vishnupura actually became a centre of Vaishnavism. Practically only in Vrindavishnupura that the Gaudiya Vaishnava art and culture developed without any foreign you know, distractions. So it flourished because the king Bihambir, for his full reign, you know, he completely supported Vaishnavism. He himself wrote many devotional songs in praise of Krishna, Mahaprabhu and Srinivas Acharya. So, of course, they notified Jiva Goswami that all the books were recovered and that the king was putting all his kingdom's resources into spreading, you know, the Vaishnava cult. So Srinivas Acharya went back to, he wanted to go back and meet some of the associates and Narottam and Shamananda. He went to see his mother, also on the way, and his mother said to him that he should marry. After, you know, which he did comply to that. Seeing that, he went to see Gadadhar Das. It's his disappearance day as well today. And Gadadhar Das blessed him with his purpose to marry. And he foretold that one day he would also taste the nectar of congregational chanting in the company of the Lord himself, along with his intimate associates. So what he's referring to there is that when they actually organized the first Gopamin festival, during that festival, Lord Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, because they had previously departed this world, but they appeared and danced ecstatically with all the devotees in the kirtan. So this is what Gadadhar Das was referring to, that this would happen in the future. He had two children, two boys, who both died at an early age. His disciples encouraged him to marry again, which he did. His two wives were great devotees. And he had some daughters other sons. He had some of the daughters, Hemlata, Krishnapriya, Katsam. His wives and children become his disciples. Some of his children, including Hemlata, his daughter, actually become initiating gurus, even in his presence. I think it was in his presence. Generally, when women initiate, just as a social etiquette, they generally initiate women, not necessarily take on male disciples. Social person, but the women are particularly prominent in their spiritual status, then they initiate men and women as they like, which Hemlata Thakurani did. So, you know, for the women in this movement, you know, things yet to come, so we'll see, you know, someday in the future, some of the women initiating gurus in our society. They organised that big massive festival for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They installed six different deities of Shishi Gaunatai. Here we see in the Srimad Bhagavatam that it describes that this Srimad Bhagavatam is all blissful. If you study the lives of Srinivasacharya, Narottam Das Thakur, Shyamananda, who tried to spread Krishna consciousness, all of them, there was just constant festivals, absolutely just constant festivals, and the festivals just got bigger and bigger, and massive amounts of prasadam. You know, wonderful kirtans that just went for days and days and days. You know, that is the blissful side of Srimad Bhagavatam. Just, you know, that is the mood of Srimad Bhagavatam, is just always being blissfully engaged in Krishna consciousness. And time to come, you will see that in this Krishna consciousness movement, that, you know, especially when some of the governments and people in the masses give more support to the Krishna consciousness, you will actually see that practically it would just be one continuous festival. Just each day there would be a big, big festival, there would be prasadam distribution, and it would just get bigger and bigger and more and more ecstatic, with more and more dedication and expertise and purity in these devotional aspects of the Vaishnava festivals. So this is the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, forget, you know, the whole world is just thinking how to do economic development and defend itself from aggressors. You know, Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, forget all of that. Just chant and dance together and feast, all your problems will be solved. You know, that's how you live in this world. Every day you chant, you know, big, big festival. All the other problems will be solved, but if you can't chant together, if you can't dance together, if you can't sit and eat together, you know, how will anything else, you know, how are you going to be able in this world to share your wealth and money and what have you? It's never going to happen. You just fight like cats and dogs, which they do. So, and when people, instead of fighting like cats and dogs over, you know, the wealth of this world, and they chant and dance and feast together, then they won't need as much, because instead of half a dozen people having 90% of the country's wealth and 10% of the people you know, having 10%. 90% of the people having like 10% of the wealth, you know, it'll be, people won't need as much. So, you know, the wealth will be just, people have millions and billions of dollars. You imagine they say, well, let's distribute that. Let's all enjoy that. There's no lack. So people think, oh, we all chant and dance and have feasting, you know, where will the money come from? The money's already there. It's just being greedily, you know, people are spending $3 million for a stamp for the stamp collection. How many festivals? How much for shaman distribution and festivals, and how many farms could be established to grow the foods and the flowers and everything? $3 million for one little stamp, seriously, in their book. So, you know, this is the blissful philosophy of Krishna consciousness if we follow in the life of these acharyas. So I've pretty much finished there. There are some very nice pastimes, if anyone's interested to hear about Srinivasacharya in his Manjari, when he was meditating in trance, how he entered into the pastimes of Radha Krishna's Leela. I can end here, I can tell maybe one short pastime if anyone's interested. Yeah, sure. Just one last point, that the king in his kingdom, he actually made the regular practice of chanting of the holy names compulsory in his kingdom. Anyone found not chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra would be asked to leave the kingdom. it wouldn't be punished, but just, go away, please. Such as the, we'll see that in time to come. Anyway, so in his Bhajanandi worship, Gosyanandi is his preaching, and Bhajanandi, this is his internal worship, Manjari Baba. So once, while he was in Vana Vishnupura, Srinivas fell into a trance while meditating on the form of as Mani Manjari, that's his form in the spiritual world. And remember that his spiritual master takes the form of Guna Manjari. So he fixed his mind on Radha and his water sports in Vrindavan with Krishna and the other eternal associates. Rupa Manjari, that's Rupa Goswami, noticed that Radharani's nose ornament fell into the water of the Jamuna. Rupa Manjari winked at Guna Manjari, that's Gopala Goswami, who, knowing the mind of Sri Rupa, dove into the water to look for the lost nose ring. He was unable to find it. So Guna Manjari engaged Mani Manjari, Srinivasacharya, in the search. Day and night, for 3 days without break, Srinivas searched for the nose ring while in meditational trance. Meanwhile, so in external consciousness, his wives were beside themselves with grief, thinking that he would die for lack of food and water. He's sitting there in trance. When the king heard the commotion, he also came running and became deeply concerned. The court physician examined Srinivasa's body and found it to be healthy, yet did not know for how long he could go before his body deteriorated critically. Srinivasa's first wife, Ishri, thought that Ram Chandra Kaviraj should be called, his very intimate friend. When he arrived and saw Srinivasa's face, he assured everyone that there need be no fear, for he was in a deep state of trance and he would soon return. So Ramchandra Kaviraj, now he's also considered the embodiment of Mani Manjari. He's also known as Karuna Manjari, but literally Ramchandra Puri, the intimate associate of Srinivasacharya, they're considered to be two people embodying the one person. They're so close, that's the closeness of their friendship. So he also sat in trance beside Srinivas, and he dived into the Jamuna, and found Srinivas still looking for the nose ring. So, in his form, as Manimanjari's other self, he jumped into the river and helped Srinivas find the nose ring, which was hidden under a lotus leaf. At the same time, Radharani had finished her water sports and she began to dress her beautiful blue in a beautiful blue sari. Her girlfriends assisted her to dress and decorate herself. When it was time to put on the nose ring, Gunamanjari confidently looked at Manimanjari, who in perfect timing came out of the